Today in the show we have the BIS study on stablecoins, tokenized wine, the battle of the SEC against Uniswap, and much more. I'm your host, Mauricio Magaldi, and this is Block Drops, your weekly digest on blockchain for business.
These news are not a form of endorsement, sponsorship, or encouragement for consumption, and are meant for educational purposes only.
In the first drop today, we're going to talk a little bit about the new BIS study on stablecoins, more specifically on stablecoin regulations. The BIS is the Bank for International Settlements. It's considered the central bank of the central banks, and it's one of the global regulatory agencies that is probably more of the dedicated to crypto and digital assets in general. They're very involved with CBDCs, the central bank digital currencies. They're very involved with tokenized deposits, stable coins, obviously, real world assets, tokenized real world assets, and even regulated DeFi. And they have been partnering with central banks all over the world to experiment, test the waters, and see where regulation and technology or regulation and innovation can actually converge and partner, so on and so forth, obviously with a huge agenda towards central banks. In this particular report, they're covering a wide ground on stablecoins. They recognize the benefits, the range of benefits, but they also map some of the inherent risks of this new form of money. They are very concerned about some of the subpar benefits versus what they consider to be remaining risks, such as depegging. Just to kind of call it back, stable coins are named as such because they are a form of money or digital money, by and large, US dollars, that are issued by a protocol, and they are pegged or they have their value associated with a corresponding fiat currency. Most of the cases is the US dollar, if not all of them. And they have this peg, which is not necessarily one-to-one. So they call it the promise of stability in the report. They also cover a variety of different approaches, both for banks and non-banks that are issuing stable coins, and also new types of financial entities that are crypto native and they have crypto native or crypto specific licenses, and they are regulated in different fashion across different jurisdictions, obviously covering prudential regulation, governance, risk management, but not all at the same time and not all in the same shape or form, which obviously then is the actual focus of this report, which is this leads to significant differences in regulatory approaches across different jurisdictions, which create lack of consistency or lack of standards and requires a hell lot of more coordination to maintain oversight for stable coins in these jurisdictions and across these jurisdictions, because one of the core use cases for stable coins, and we wouldn't be surprised, is cross-border payments and remittances. So it's obviously that this will involve one or more different jurisdictions, which creates even more space for regulatory arbitrage. So yes, they are concerned about the risks, and but more importantly, they're concerned about the uptake in adoption of stable coins without the corresponding standardization of the regulatory framework across the jurisdictions that are involved in regulating and enabling the use of stable coins. So we have a scenario with regulatory fragmentation, and then this leads to the so-called regulatory arbitrage, which means that builders and issuers will find jurisdictions that are more, convenient, not necessarily friendly, but convenient to them. So very interesting study. Most regulators, central banks and whatnot will lean into this study to start converging. It is incumbent upon the industry to actually collaborate, participate, and help steer the conversation between regulators and the industry and between regulators. So I think this is good progress, but as with everything that's coming out of the BIS, it's important that we pay attention and that we engage the regulators so this doesn't get out of hand. Those of you who've been listening Block Drops for a longer time will recall that one of the first traceability / tokenization use cases that we've seen that is not necessarily related to financial assets was the use case of traceability of wine bottles from California to China by a startup by the name of Gliding Eagle. I think they started back in 2016. And it's very interesting that this second drop, we're going to talk about tokenized wine. Look at that. So tokenized wine is the use case that has been implemented by GRT Wines. And it's a digital platform that connects collectors and investors of vintage and fine wines that are tokenized. So each bottle, by the time the wine is bottled, gets a digital certificate and gets registered on chain. And they are stored under custody of the wineries, the corresponding wineries, until the digital certificate is traded, and it can be traded in a primary and secondary market, and then redeemed for then ultimately, you know, being delivered to the final destination for that bottle. According to Statista, just in the United States alone, collectible wines is a $60 billion market just in the United States. So very interesting to see a large market like that with what you would call not as much of a liquid asset, pardon the pun, is now being tokenized and enabling even more liquidity. So according to Victor Yin, who's one of the co-founders of GRT Wines and the CTO there, he says the following here, quote, "With the use of smart contracts, we double down on proof of ownership and provenance, effectively enhancing the overall transparency and security in the persistent counterfeit market," end quote. So it's not only that it creates more liquidity, it pairs the ability of the blockchain to actually trace the data about the asset throughout its life cycle, which should prevent the counterfeit market. That was also one of the premises for the Gliding Eagle use case. And this is now not only doing that, but also enabling trading of these tokenized assets. According to another co-founder, Jonathan Sloan, the CEO, and I quote, "Traditional alternative assets such as well-aged wines, fine art, and luxury watches have gained significant traction among younger buyers, serving as both portfolio diversification and elevated lifestyle," end quote. So here's the other part of that, which is you get provenance, you get ownership, you get liquidity, and you speak to a new generation of buyers that are now used to accessing some of these, accessible luxury items, and they're also accustomed, because most of these folks were also trading NFTs at the height of the hype market of NFTs 2 years ago. They're now used to crypto as well. So very interesting that these markets are kind of converging around now a high value item such as aged wine, and also speaks to the wider lifestyle and gives them traceability. So it fights counterfeit. It accesses liquidity from a market that it's now being formed around these types of assets. Very interesting. There's more in this industry. We've seen a few examples recently, but it's very interesting to see that wine in and of itself is something that will create a lot more leverage in the market. So what I'm very interested to see is, because these are on-chain assets, there is a byproduct of this, is how do you use such a tokenized asset for other financial operations using it as collateral? So I'm eager to see how much more these projects will bring to bear interoperability and composability as these assets become increasingly more popular on-chain and can be used for other financial instruments. In the last drop today, we're going to talk about a piece of news that generated quite a stir in the DeFi space this week, which is the Wells notice from the SEC to Uniswap, one of the most popular DeFi protocols. And this is something that is indicative of what's to come in this year for DeFi as a whole. So before we talk about specifically the Uniswap case, I think it's worth mentioning, what is a Wells notice, right? A Wells notice is an instrument of notification that is issued by the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, to let the company that's received that notice that it's considering bringing some form of enforcement action against that entity. It could be an entity or an individual. That means that the SEC has concluded an investigation and has reasonable evidence that a particular entity is in breach of securities regulation. Does that mean that the company or the individual will be prosecuted? No, it means that they found evidence, and now it's incumbent upon the party that's been notified to respond to the Wells notice, giving counter evidence that it's not doing anything illegal and why, or if it's found that they are doing something that breaches regulation, this is the plan to fix that or to correct whatever the practice is. So this is the current situation with the SEC and Uniswap. Now, the thing that is very peculiar in DeFi, especially in the Uniswap case, is that the Uniswap protocol is a set of smart contracts running autonomously on-chain. So once it's been deployed, it's built by Uniswap Labs, and it's been deployed, no one can stop it. It just runs. That's what a protocol does. It just runs. So Uniswap, the protocol, can actually be accessed by any front-end because it's just a set of smart contracts running on-chain that can be accessed by anyone. It's permissionless, it's autonomous, and it's just running on the blockchain. On the other end, the Uniswap Labs also provides a front end in which users can actually connect their wallets, and that front end interacts with the protocol for whatever services the users are trying to benefit from. And the entity being notified by the SEC is the Uniswap Labs, but it's being notified on the grounds of what they found in the Uniswap protocol. So this is going to turn the conversation to a very interesting space. As the long-time listeners of the show know, I am a proponent of regulatory integration. And what we're seeing here is a regulator who's not integrated on-chain, meaning they're not actually participating, neither for oversight or for establishing standards to operate DeFi on the blockchain, and a company or protocol that is exclusively on-chain, which means that the paradigm in which Uniswap operates, the protocol operates, is dramatically different from the paradigm in which the SEC or traditional regulators in general operate. This creates a gap in perspective and in understanding. It means that the SEC is applying a centralized regulatory framework onto a decentralized protocol. That is a huge gap. So what I expect this litigation to conclude at some point, and this is me being very, this is wishful thinking, is that the regulators are going to come to the conclusion that they will need to change their stance and finally reach the epiphany of regulatory integration to be able to not only regulate DeFi or any other decentralized protocol, but also to benefit from the benefits of the blockchain. So here's me hoping that this conversation actually evolves to something that creates, not only in the US, but in the rest of the world, enough conversations so we can start converging the decentralized paradigm with centralized regulators. In a week packed full of news, here's more. Spaço Lab is an educational project taking Web3 to public schools in Brazil, and they require your support, so click on the link in the description to find out how you can help them. Fuse Capital and Transfer are partnered to launch BRX, a platform to foster decentralization of traditional financial markets in Brazil. The Emurgo Association partnered with Huawei Cloud to expand the Cardano network and scale Web3 solutions in the Asia-Pacific region. JP Morgan announced they're integrating their settlement mechanism with JPM Coin with treasury solution giant Kyriba. Copper, Name, and Aeon completed a first regulated crypto insurance pilot. Votorantim Bank in Brazil is testing car sales as part of their Drex pilot. Drex is Brazil's CBDC program, with the help of Parfin and Consensus. You can now buy tokenized debt for the new Hilton Hotel in El Salvador using the Bitcoin L2 Liquid. Catch us online. We're on Instagram at BlockDrops Podcast, on Twitter at BlockDrops Pod or Xerox Mauricio. We're on Lens at BlockDrops.Lens. We have a newsletter on LinkedIn. Write to us at BlockDropsPodcast@gmail.com. And you can listen to the BlockDrops Podcast at Spotify, iColab, Febrebun Tech, and all of the other major streaming platforms. Shoutouts today to the people who share the links you will find in the episode notes: Ariel Alexandre, Gustavo Cunha, Taro Ogata, and Claudio Just. Don't forget to leave the ratings on your favorite player. This is all for today. Stay rare, stay weird. LFG.